This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Today we mourn those who died this morning on American Airlines Flight 587. Today is also the day that we honor all those who have fought in defense of the United States. Veterans Day originated as Armistice Day in commemoration of the end of World War I. Historian Neil Ferguson is the author of The Pity of War, Explaining World War I. It's about how the First World War changed the nature of war and changed the world. About 10 million people died in the First World War between the years 1914 and 1918. About 20 million were wounded. Ferguson is British. He says that the First World War was worse for his country than the Second. For example, more British soldiers were killed in World War I than World War II. I asked him for other examples.
Well, I think one could make a general statement, which would probably be true of all the European states, namely that the First World War was a bigger shock. When the Second World War came along, there was a very clear memory of what war was like. No one had any illusions about the enormous loss of life that would arise in the event of a major European war. Whereas in 1914, it's clear that only the real specialists, the military planners, the people who understood what heavy artillery could do, really grasped in 1914 what a European war meant. And I think for that reason, the trauma, the caesura is that much greater. The difference between pre-war and post-war is somehow greater in the case of the First World War than it is in the case of the Second World War, when everybody knows that they're letting themselves in for hell when war breaks out.
Would you describe a little bit about what the Western Front was like, what the trench warfare of the day was like?
Well, trench warfare was a kind of return to siege warfare in one sense, namely from a very early stage, really from the early days of 1915, the positions on the Western Front were pretty much fixed. Very little territorial change occurred until the spring of 1918, and in the rest of 1918, the war became a war of movement again. So for most of the war, the front is very static, much more than on the Eastern Front, where there's much greater mobility. And that means that the common experience of combat on the Western Front was that you sat in a hole in the ground and you hoped that the shells wouldn't hit you. Most people, the majority of people, are killed by artillery shells. They're not killed in action by bayonets or rifles. And indeed, going over the top into action on an offensive is an exceptional experience. So it's a very sedentary war, and it's an extremely nerve-wracking war, because I think it's safe to say that the experience of being bombed, of being shelled for hours at a time in these massive artillery bombardments which went on the Western Front was probably one of the worst experiences a human being could have in the 20th century. Even if you survived it, your nerves were completely shattered.
Well, would you describe one of the battles that had massive casualties?
Well, from the British point of view, the most notorious battle is the Battle of the Somme, with Passchendaele as a close second. The Battle of the Somme happens in 1916. In the summer of 1916, a massive army has been accumulated and is sent towards German positions over the relatively flat battlefield of the Somme. Not a particularly good place to fight a battle, but chosen because it was close to the French and the French seemed to need some support. And for reasons which are intimately bound up with the lack of British preparation for the war, the fact that there simply hadn't been a big British army in 1914, that almost everybody who goes over the top in 1916 has been very hurriedly trained, and because the army itself does not really have a theory of how you fight this kind of war, they march pretty slowly and steadily towards German machine gun emplacements, which have been more or less unscathed by the preceding bombardment. Now, the effect of the bombardment, which the British commander, Haig, firmly believed would shatter German resistance, was simply to warn the Germans what was going to happen next. The Germans had dug themselves in deep. When the shells stopped, up they came from their emplacements, took up their machine guns, and they simply mowed down the advancing British soldiers. And the casualties on the first day alone number tens and tens of thousands. The numbers killed in the whole of the Battle of the Somme, which lasted for several months, for Britain were greater than the number of Americans killed in the whole Vietnam War.
That's pretty amazing figures. The First World War resulted in a lot of terrific literature, much of it anti-war literature. You quote Ernst Jünger's diary of a German front line at Guillemont in August of 1916, and he writes, "Among the living lay the dead. As we dug ourselves in, we found them in layers, stacked up one on top of another. One company after another had been shoved into the drum fire and steadily annihilated." You also have a lot of pretty gruesome photographs in the book from World War One, but the photograph I actually found most shocking was a photograph of Scottish troops wearing kilts. And I'm thinking, wow, this is like fighting trench warfare in a skirt. It astounded me.
It astounded the Germans, too. One of the things that German writers about the war, men like Jünger, often commented upon was the particular aggressiveness and ferocity of the Scottish regiments, who were instantly recognizable by their kilts. The kilt was only abandoned as frontline dress relatively late in the war, when it was realized that when poison gas was released, Scottish soldiers suffered disproportionately because the gas got under their kilts and inflicted terrible burns. But for most of the war, the Scottish Highland regiments wore the kilt, and the Germans called them divils in skirts, or the women from hell, because they were very distinctive in the way that they dressed. They were also distinctive in the way that they fought. And it's clear that the Scottish regiments not only suffered the highest casualties of any army in the war, but also probably inflicted pretty hefty casualties on the Germans. They were renowned for the ferocity of their conduct in action. And it's clear that, for example, Scottish regiments were involved in the incidents of prisoner killing, which I detail in one of the chapters in the books. This is important because my grandfather was in one of these regiments, and I suppose I would never have written the book had it not been for the realization that as a teenager, my own grandfather had been in the Seaforth Highlanders and had been one of those young men that you see in the plates in the book, sitting in a trench waiting to go over the top and kill Germans.
Do you know if he wore a kilt when he was in battle?
Yes, he did. I still have it.
Did you talk with him about that?
I was very young when he died. I was about 4 or 5 when my grandfather died, so I don't have clear recollections of the kind of conversations that I would love to have with him now, where he's still alive. But he talked enough with my father about it for me to have a reasonably good idea of what his war was like. Unlike the famous war poets and war novelists, nothing survives of my grandfather's war on paper, just a box full of a couple of medals and a small Bible. But the memories he passed down through my father to me were enough for me to reconstruct more or less what he went through.
What's one of those memories that your father shared with you?
It seems pretty likely that my grandfather was there when the Germans launched their final all-out offensive in the spring of 1918, which very nearly won the war, because he described the experience of seeing the advancing German infantry and preparing to be sent into action against them, and feeling absolutely certain that this was it, because the Germans at this point seemed quite unstoppable. And at the very last minute, a neighboring unit was sent over instead of his unit, and he was pretty sure that that decision had saved his life. And that's one of the kind of stories that is etched on my memory from my days as a small boy.
How do you think World War One affected your family's feelings about war?
I think it had a very profound effect on Scotland because of this very high mortality rate. My own school was dedicated as a war memorial after the war was over, and so I went to school every day passing the war memorial, which had these huge letters, "Say not that the brave die." And I always used to think to myself, well, hang on, they did die, brave or not brave. And I certainly, as a schoolboy, was strongly attracted to the anti-war message of poets like Wilfred Owen, whom I was encouraged to read by my teachers. And I think my own family certainly were liberals with a pretty strong pacifist streak. There was certainly no appetite for another war or any more war in my family. And when my other grandfather had to go and fight in the Second World War, and he ended up fighting the Japanese in Asia, it was with no great enthusiasm and a deep sense of resignation. And I think for me, coming to terms with this family memory is part of the reason for writing the book, not least because I began to realize that the anti-war literature wasn't really the whole truth. In some ways, it's a rather unrepresentative take on the frontline experience. I mean, you mentioned Ernst Jünger, but Ernst Jünger is not an anti-war writer. When you read Jünger's account of being on the Western Front, it's constantly referring to the exhilaration of military experience, of the front experience. And for people like Jünger, or more notoriously, for soldiers like the young Adolf Hitler, the First World War wasn't just a hellish experience, that at the same time that it was hellish, it was also a supreme test of their manhood, of their inner strength, and the friendships and comradeship of the front was something which lived on in their imaginations after the war.
Historian Neil Ferguson recorded in 1999, after the publication of his book, The Pity of War, Explaining World War I. This is Fresh Air.